for permitting this swap. And I apologize if I have some hiccups in some of the slides, which Lucia prepared together with me, but some of the things she's more familiar with than I am. But and I think it's particularly a pity that she cannot be here, because it seems that the organizers have used our picture here of this host supernova remnant with this runaway pulsar here to model their conference picture here with the supernova remnant and the Kanya lighthouse here. They missed the jet, but everything else seems to match very perfectly. So anyway, so this is based on a series of papers which you've just have seen on the right top. So I don't have to set the stage here. We're talking about pulsar wind nebulae. It has been discussed before. The energy source of these is the rotational energy loss of a pulsar, with up to 50% of the energy going into the relativistic particle wind of positron electron, and probably more. We diagnose this with synchrotron and inverse complement from the relativistic particles and optical Balmer lines. From the seminal paper here from Pat and others, prominent pulsar wind nebulae seem to emerge above a certain threshold, but this is not, of course, a hard threshold, so we have prominent pulsar wind nebulae even below this energy loss from the pulsar. So these are the pictures which you've seen before from symmetric pulsar wind nebula in the center of supernova remnants. We're talking here about, you see one of the very prominent examples here. So just to remind you, we are dealing here with all of the components probably which you know from the standard pulsar wind nebula, like the Crab or Vela pulsar in the center, pulsar wind nebula, jet and quasar jet, and the host supernova remnant, which, depending on whether the pulsar has left the remnant or not, is surrounding or is next to it, or we don't know where it is. So since we're talking, as I said, about fast pulsars, we have to add velocity to the pulsar, and then typically if the pulsar becomes supersonic, then we see a Bauschok geometry. We see them often inside the supernova remnant, but very often they have left the remnant. For typical speeds of the pulsar, this happens after a canonical time of a couple of 10,000 years, when also the host supernova remnant sort of dims in the X-rays. So normally we don't see them, the very active supernova remnant for typical speeds. So it's really outstanding that we, in this particular system, and I'll show that in a minute, see both the host supernova remnant nearby and the fast pulsar next to it. So let's get, before I go into the recent results which we obtained with a deep 250 kilosecond Chandra observation, let me give you a quick recap of what the history, a relatively short history of this object. It has been discovered serendipitously with Integral, which is why it has this IGR name. So we came up with this lighthouse nebula name, which is a bit more catchy because no one can remember this number. Actually, it has been seen in an XMM Newton observation of the supernova remnant before. It has sort of not attracted too much attention before we looked into that, and so we published this. Lucia was leading all of the efforts in this paper here, and Tomsik came with a short Chandra follow-up observation in 2012. So this is where we discovered this source, sort of made clear that it's a pulsar wind nebula. Then we obtained a 50 kilosecond Chandra observation shown here, and the outstanding feature was this jet-like feature here, which sort of seemed to have a helical, or seems to have a helical pattern, which was new, and we tried hard to understand, and I'll show that in a minute. The confirmation that this is really a pulsar and a pulsar wind nebula system came from the P and P dot observations from Halpern et al. In 2014 with XMM Newton. So we see the X-ray pulsations of the pulsar with 1.3 times 10 to the 36 arcs per second spin down luminosity and 60 millisecond pulsations. And the results I'm going to report here is based on the 250 kilosecond Chandra observation, which we recently obtained and which is now on the archive and is about to be published in ANI. So let's go straight into the new picture, which is shown here. So this is a composite of the two previous 50 kilosecond and the new 250 kilosecond observation. There is no change. We don't see any proper motion, which is also not expected at a distance of this object of 7 kiloparsecs. So we, Lucia made this composite image here. And all the things which we've seen before are confirmed, but we see this now in greater detail. We see here the shaft-like, this arrow-like, with the shaft morphology of this pulsar wind nebula. The jet is now resolved much better due to the higher statistics, which has given us a lot of new puzzles, which I'll go into detail. We've also discovered here some arc-like structures, which is probably due to the bow-shock geometry of the pulsar. Although there's only a few photons here, it's hard to prove that. So there's new details. The most outstanding feature, again, is still the jet, and we can do a lot of more, although we don't have a real clue on some of the features which we're seeing yet. Let's look at the pulsar wind nebula first, just to do the easy things first. This was in the earlier publication. This is radio observation from the more relic pulsar wind nebula. This is the X-ray pulsar wind nebula. And this earlier observation shown here is the profile going away from the pulsar. So this is all sort of what you expect. Closer to the pulsar, there's the X-rays, the freshly injected particles, the radio with lower energies. It's matching perfectly the synchrotron cooling, which you expect in such a pulsar wind. So we could do a lot of things. Confirm the pulsar wind nebula. We have an estimate on the velocity due to the confinement of this nebula here, which is of the order of 1,000 kilometers per second, which is, of course, outstanding, but it's not outrageous compared to others of these fast systems. With the new data, we have much more detail here. We resolved this morphology a bit better here with this arrow and shaft-like feature here. We also can do a spectral map showing the synchrotron burning of the particles in this remnant as expected going away from the pulsar. So the new thing here is this morphology and the arc-like structure. The arc-like structure reminds us of things like we are seeing in Geminga and a few other systems. So probably it's a bow shock. This has to be confirmed because of the low number statistics here. The interesting thing here is, where does this morphology come from? In other similar systems, people have suggested that this could be a jet, the jet from the pulsar, sort of overlaid by the pulsar wind nebula. So if you believe that this is the jet, then of course this cannot be the case here. So it seems to be that we have to think of something else here. So probably there's different degree of magnetic collimation in these different sort of populations of pulsar of particles in the pulsar wind nebula. So let's go to the jet, which is really the most puzzling thing of this. The source. So we are dealing with a couple of these sources. I'll show some more pictures in a minute. And the general question is this really a true ballistic jet? Which I personally still am convinced that it is, but it's really hard to prove. Or is it particles diffusing outwards along some pre-existing magnetic filamentary structure? This has first been suggested by Rina Wadiera for the Guitar Nebula, that such a feature could come from particles which have been accelerated to relativistic energies in the pulsar wind nebula and then are streaming outwards in filamentary structures. The scales seem to sort of fit also other simulations, and this is some simulation in a totally different context with proton cosmic rays, but the underlying mechanism is sort of the same. So that's the main question which we are dealing with in this system here. So looking back again at the older data, which we have the 50 kiloseconds, where we saw this helical structure and thought, I mean, this can only be a jet, and it seems to be a precessing jet. So Lucia came up with a nice, decent model explaining all the features. Counterjet is suppressed due to Doppler deboosting in the plane of the sky. The main jet is boosted because it's coming towards us. She derived all these parameters from the observations, and this really the striking thing was then if you look at the brightness profile along the jet, it matches perfectly with the prediction from Doppler boosting and deep boosting inside the main jet. So we felt there's a strong confirmation that it's really a jet with some underlying helical structure, which is either due to the fact. The question then comes, where does this precession come from? I mean, normally we're used to looking at precession in binary systems, like in this planetary nebula system, or in SS433, a black hole binary system, where we know that, where we're seeing this precession, and this can be explained due to the accretion of the two stellar objects in the binary system. We also know these structures from the Vela, where people, many of the which are in the audience, have observed Vela the pulsar, the jet with, thanks, with the sequence of Chandra observations, and they're seeing this this change of the jet over time, and either it is due to precession, and we argued that for our jet, a 66 years variability period, which comes out of this precession model, has not been observed before, but it's not impossible, and it fits sort of to ideas from free precession of the neutron star. So maybe it's possible, but of course it can also be, as has been suggested in for Vela, kink instabilities in the jet, which is moving outward and producing sort of these quasi-periodic oscillations, which you see in simulations in astrophysical context, as well in simulations for plasma simulations in completely different context here, or even observations seeing here in plasma in the lab. So maybe it's kink instabilities, maybe it's free precession from pulsar, from the neutron star, but no matter what, both explanations would require that it's a ballistics jet. So what comes out of the new 300 or 250 kilosecond Chandra observations? The broad picture seemed to be okay. The brightness profile along the jet seems to match. So the green one is the old data, the black one is the new data. So this all seems to look fine. But I mean, if you look very closely, you immediately see that the spread, which we believed was due to maybe diffusion of particles out of the jet, is no longer just the diffuse emission. It seems to be well organized and structured. I mean, this is a very nice picture. All these dots here are 3 sigma and above. So it's highly significant that there is ordered structure around the jet, which you absolutely cannot explain with a simple jet. So this is really a puzzle. Lucia also made a spectrum map along the jet to see if the spectrum, we can make sense out of the spectrum also there. This is really puzzling. If you look here at the index as a function of the distance to the pulsar, it seems to soften, but then there seems to be a hardening trend, which, I mean, is not seen in the velocity in the brightness index distribution. So people argue that it could be reacceleration of particles along here the jet. So that would mean that it's really a jet, but it does not explain the features which we are seeing here. We tried to understand this a bit more quantitatively. These are profiles perpendicular to the jet here, and you clearly see significant features which cannot be explained. So this is in different profiles here. You cannot explain this with whatever broadness profile of a single jet what you can make out of it. So if you look at this picture, you can start to dream and to think of what is the underlying geometry. The interesting thing is, if you just play with this helical structure parameters and just keep the precession period and everything, and just change the period and also align the jet a little bit, then you can see that you sort of reproduce these features reasonably well. It's hard to do this really quantitatively with a stringent fit, so it's basically just a suggestion and not a proof. But the question comes then, what is this? Are these several jets launched from the same pulsar here? The problem with if that were sort of relic jets, they're all going back to the center of the system here. So in a ballistic jet, you would expect, if you're seeing previous jets, that they don't connect to the position here. So that rather points to the idea that this is diffusion along these structures going forward and backwards. So there's pros and cons to both ideas, whether it's diffusion along these structures or it's a ballistic jet. And so we're at this point, have scratched our heads quite a while, but we haven't come to a conclusion yet. So let's quickly look at the ideas how pulsar jets are launched. I mean, the important point is the jets don't connect directly to the pulsar, as all of you know. Oh, 1 minute, so I need to speed up a little bit, basically through. So the thing is, the pulsar wind jets do not connect directly to the pulsar. The idea is that the particles are moving radially outwards, and there's a magnetic hoop stress which confines then the particles and produces these jets. And I mean, the question was, what really happens if you take such a system and move it at 1,000 kilometers per second. This is unknown, and this is something where people and we should look into whether this is responsible for the geometric change there. We're not alone in the field. Of course, the first system where such a peculiar jet has been discovered is the jet in the Gitter Nebula very recently in JS1509. There is this the pulse of wind and this jet-like feature here in our thing here. What you recognize is, very quickly say, I mean, the thing is 1,000 kilometers per second. It's not directly measured. We don't measure the standoff distance from the bow shock, but we have indirect evidence from the association with the supernova remnant and from the culmination of the pulse of wind that this is 1,000 kilometers or even more if you place the remnant at a little larger distance. But I mean, the 7 kiloparsec distance to the remnant seems to be very solid. So 1,000 kilometers per second speed is probably the system, which fits perfectly well with all the newly discovered and characterized fast systems which we know of here. The real puzzle with our system and also with the Gitter Nebula is that the jet is not aligned with the speed, with the direction of the pulsar motion. We believe from all the observations and from theoretical models that there should be a correlation between the pulsar speed and the jet direction. But in this system here in the Gitter Nebula, in our system, the Lighthouse Nebula, it's not the case. And the question is, what can we understand this? And for this also, a look at the host system, at the supernova remnant may help. And in the minus 1 minute I have, this is my last slide, explain a little what I wanted to say here. It's really outstanding that we know pretty sure where the pulsar has been emerging, that it has left the host supernova remnant here and is moving outwards here. The association is really relatively solid. The distance estimates match. The velocity estimates match pretty well. So this seems to be very solid. Question is, can we make more out of it? The asymmetry of the fact that this thing is moving outwards very quickly can be checked with looking what you would expect in the remnant. So if that's really that the pulse has been kicked from an asymmetric core collapse explosion, can be traced by asymmetric chemical composition in the remnant, which seems to be somewhat confirmed in the XMM-Newton data here. The question is there a model which can predict that the pulsar spin axis is perpendicular and not in the direction of the speed? There's just one in the literature if you have a bars and stable core collapse, which would, in this particular paper, we found that there is a prediction that the pulsar spin in this model of explosion is perpendicular to the pulsar speed, the pulsar which is spelled from the explosion. We don't say that this is necessarily the case. It's just interesting that we have this diagnosis method and we should deeper look into that. With that, I end with this series of pictures which Lucia collected. Thanks for your attention.
Thanks, Garrett. We have time for maybe one or two short questions. Is there any? Rina?
Yes, one comment. The point is that the size of this feature is above 10 parsec or so, right?
It's 10 parsec in the plane, 15 if you believe
yes, even more.
Something like that.
Now, the point is the following. Within the kind of model for the Gitter Nebula, in that case, this feature was striked because the size was about 1 parsec only. At sizes of about 10-15 parsec, the natural turbulence of the magnetic field in the interstellar medium could actually provide some bending. Or now, unless you find a very good fit that is absolutely shows that it must be in some helicoidal structure, I would say that a turbulent the bending of the magnetic field could actually also in the other scenario explain to some extent this kind of feature.
Okay, so we felt if I totally take your point. We felt initially that the scale of 10 parsec and above is sort of a bit in contradiction with the magnetic fluctuations. On the other hand, we are seeing this this structure, as you just said. So I think both possibilities are still viable at this point in time. Did I take your comment correctly?
Okay, I think we need to move on to the next speaker. Let's thank Gerd again.